This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, y'all? This is Zach with Living Corporate. And if you didn't know, Living Corporate is an experiences management company, y'all. What does that mean? That means we help organizations support their go-to-market strategy through building market trust, as well as their employee engagement strategy by building employee trust. And how do we do that? Well, we have data analytics and organizational assessments. We have our e-learning platform, and we have our media capabilities, our brand storytelling capabilities. What you're about to listen to is an incredible conversation we had with the executive leader at Capgemini. Capgemini is a global consulting firm shaping the entire world, organizational transformation, digital transformation, technical implementations, you name it, Capgemini does it. So excited and thankful for this campaign. Shout out to Janet Pope. Shout out to the executive leadership team. I'm excited for you to get into this discussion. Here we go. Janet Pope, longtime friend of the show. How you doing?
What's going on, Zach? Happy to be here.
Listen, I'm thrilled to be here with you. You know, you are, I don't know, there's a bunch of titles I could give you, right? But I'm going to just say, like, you're the Don Dada at Capgemini, right? You're the glue. You're the connective tissue bringing all these things together, around, especially around corporate responsibility and just overarching, like, people, brand, strategy. I mean, yeah, it's a lot going on. I'd like to understand, like, what your overarching approach is to corporate responsibility engagement and how it's integrated into the broader operations and business strategy of Capgemini.
Yeah, great question. I sort of like your title, maybe better than the official corporate responsibility and engagement one. But when I think about corporate responsibility at Capgemini and in the US and Canada specifically, and how partner and are really integrated with business and operations and our people and talent initiatives, we're focused on maybe two main things. So one, we really try to work across all of what we call the pillars of corporate responsibility. And so when we think about diversity, equity, and inclusion, sustainability as we reduce our own carbon footprint, digital inclusion in the way that we volunteer and give back leveraging our own technical skills, we don't look at those as silos. We look at them as, you know, there are intersections between these topics. And when we're volunteering and we're training and mentoring people from vulnerable communities on technology, we want to make sure that those groups and cohorts of beneficiaries from that training or learners from those training programs are women and underrepresented minorities or historically marginalized communities. And so also when we think about sustainability and where we want to have awareness or education or the communities that we want to be the most impactful in, again, we're thinking about, like, you think about clean water, for example, and which communities are impacted by clean water, right? We want to make sure we're looking at that holistically. And, you know, I might even say I want to see more women, more Black talent, more Hispanic talent leading on sustainability topics. I want to see more diverse groups of people leading on Gen AI topics. And so if we really want to make sure that our communities aren't left out of the good results of the solutions that are coming from these things, we have to be a part of these conversations and helping to shape the strategy of these topics. So that's really, really important. And we're thinking across all those intersections. The other thing from a business perspective for Capgemini is really our purpose. Our purpose statement as a company has inclusion and sustainability anchored throughout it. So if we're really what we call unleashing human energy, leveraging our brain power for an inclusive and a sustainable future as the purpose of our organization, it doesn't get more corporate responsibility focused than that. So really wanting to make sure we're doing that with and for our clients. And, you know, all of this is to have a better society, a better planet, a better world. And I hope most, if not all of our people really feel like they're enabled to make a difference for their clients and their clients' customers in these ways.
You know, it's interesting you said this, and so you have this title, and it sounds, in certain ways, it sounds very, there's a word for it, Janet, like when you're, it sounds very altruistic, mm-hmm. right? Right? It sounds extremely altruistic, but it's like a very real capitalist, for-profit narrative under all of it, right? So like, I'm curious, like, as you think about the role that you, the role that you sit in, mm-hmm. how do you balance like the incredible things you just said with like, the also very like black and white, oftentimes very black and white pressures that C-suite executives project upon and press upon their leaders of just like, we need to make revenue. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question here in 2024, right? Where mm-hmm. I think there's an ongoing conversation about whether there are companies that are sort of decommitting investments on ESG or diversity, equity, and inclusion specifically, or just sort of the state of the times right now on these topics. So the way that you, and I don't want to say the business case for diversity, I think we're long, long past the business case for any of these topics, but the way that we try to make sure that it's really clear the value and the benefit to continue to drive our commitment and deliver is based on, for us, the ability to partner with our clients on these topics. So for example, I'm not sure when this will post, but we're heading into International Women's Day and a lot of planning around International Women's Day, global event for many, many companies. And so our clients are celebrating International Women's Day as well. There are things that we can do together to continue to grow and expand our relationships and the communities that, that we're working in. And this is a great way to do that. So there's a way to learn from each other, do things specifically in the community together in our volunteering. I was actually recently a part of the Houston Sustainability Connect, where we brought clients, we brought partners on technology, startup company representatives, universities in Houston representatives to talk through the state of where we are related to sustainability and the fact that as a planet, we need to have 7% reductions and the best case scenario in 2020 when we were all sheltered in place, we only reduced between 4 and 5% of our carbon emissions, and we need to get 7% annually based on the last meeting of the World Economic Forum in Davos. So this is a problem. This is a challenge, and we're not going to do it as one entity, as one company. We have to come together across organizations, including agencies, governments, et cetera, if we're going to get anywhere near where we need to meet our sustainability goals as a planet. And so when you start to maybe make that really clear and show how we can help our own clients and others think through the solutions for these challenges, like world challenges, that helps keep this topic at the forefront of people's minds.
So what I'm hearing is, since Capgemini is like a client-facing consulting firm, the way that y'all realize change is through the clients that you work with, as opposed to necessarily like as its own independent entity, because Capgemini exists as a services company. Am I right?
Yeah, so we are a business and technology transformation partner for our clients. And yes, we can make all of this more real and tangible in the world in the way that we help our clients define their solution. So let me give an example. We have worked with a large, I think I'll say fast food chain or consumer products company to help them think about the waste of like plastic signage and needing to change plastic signage, right? If you think about a menu at a fast food restaurant, having all of that digitized saves carbon from a plastics perspective, but also just when you think about other aspects of transport and things and helping them think through waste reduction and how much you don't have to put on a truck now to do some of the things that need to happen in the supply chain. Like we've helped companies think through all of that for carbon reductions. So, probably not the cleanest example off the top of my head in terms of the way that I explain that, but that's the type of challenges that we're helping our clients think through all the time.
So, it's interesting, like, again, in the spirit of like just working with your clients and working like in the market. And that's it's and I again I think it's just different and it's unique compared to like, let's say if you were like the head of corporate responsibility at Exxon or at Ford or at like an organization that was building and selling and pushing out widgets to in some way, right? Like it's all about relationships and partnerships. Can you discuss any partnerships or collaborations that Capgemini has formed? You talked about this one particular entity, but like when we talk about like global sustainability goals, are there any like named brands or partners that come to mind that you're really proud of, and like the in terms of the impact that they've had?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me shift from clients to partners though, because I think it would make more sense to talk about some of the partners. So like the World Economic Forum, Capgemini globally was one of the first to join the sort of task force that was dedicated to think through race and what specific things companies need to think through to make sure that they had racial equity in their organizations from a strategy perspective, but also just as a collaborative and to have a global approach to it, right? And there were a number of different representatives from multiple countries and multiple companies sort of thinking through what a assessment of that might look like. And so I know one thing that we leverage that's not the same as this, but similar is the EDGE process. So economic dividends for gender equality that in the last couple of years has expanded beyond gender and, help people think through age and nationality versus where maybe the company is headquartered, race, ethnicity, LGBTQ, a number of different factors of how people self-identify. And it brings a framework of looking at the company's data, looking at policies and procedures and understanding whether employees are actually leveraging those policies, and then getting the sentiment of the people in the workforce and comparing all of that data, all of that input to understand where an organization really is on equity. So, in all of the ways that you can define that. And I like that process. Probably the computer engineer in me really likes that holistic process of not only looking at the data, but also looking at how people feel about all of this and whether they're using the policies and the actual policies themselves has been really, really important on our journey to help us understand where to focus to improve. So I know there are a number of companies that are EDGE certified. We're globally EDGE certified, which requires you to be certified in a number of countries based on headcount. But that has been a really good process for us. And EDGE is actually a great partner. World Economic Forum is a great partner. Valuable 500 is focused on disability and ability inclusion, another great partner. And, you know, we have quite a few globally. UNICEF from a more of a social impact perspective, but those are a few of them.
So it's interesting, you talked about data a good bit there. And obviously there's multiple and different types of data sets that you're having to pull from to even really get an understanding of what's happening across your strategic efforts. I'm curious to understand, what does the data tracking look like at Capgemini? Like, and how do you feel about it today? Like, what are, and then also like, where would you aspire, where would you hope or aspire for things to be if you're not exactly in a perfect place today?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think most people in different facets of talent in HR type positions are probably paying a lot of attention to generative AI and predictive analytics and, you know, interested to understand how they can better leverage these evolving technologies to not only make sense of the data that they have, which I think many companies are probably quite good at this point, but what do I, like, how do I get the next level of insight? How do I not react to what's already happened and actually leverage some predictive analytics to make some decisions that will better help me impact the future, right? So I think, you know, I'd be curious if anybody feels like they've figured all of that out. Like, I would love to connect through some of these exchanges and partnerships and coalitions of companies on that particular topic. But I think one of the interesting things around AI and maybe even generative AI, which are different things, is, you know, the ability to help us make sense of more and more of that data quickly, and even leverage, you know, prompting to answer really specific questions from leaders, right? Because the one thing, you know, and I know you know this, Zach, just based on how your career path and your career journey is, every leader likes the dashboard a little different, right? And so because of what they're focused on, right? What your CEO mm-hmm. cares about and might want to see in a quick view is a little different than maybe what your operations leader will want to look at, which might be slightly different from what your HR person wants to look at. And, you know, most people in some of these slim teams don't want to spend their month updating three or four different dashboards, right? and again, in a great company, a lot of that's automated, and we have a people insights team and they do amazing work. But I also know there's a future where a CEO could probably type, you know, what percentage of women do I have in this business line? And
right.
if everything's working as it should, a number just shows up.
They get now, that data back.
Now, whether it's hallucinating or other things, we'll figure that out later, I guess. But, you know, there's a world in a not too distant future where I think a lot more of that works, or, you know, it's 90% correct most of the time. So I'm excited for the journey of, you know, where all of this can go.
You know, I'm excited about it too, Jan. I think that I think organizations, by and large, greatly overestimate their ability to really understand and engage their data sets in an effective way. Mm-hmm. But I also believe there's still like more to do, right? In terms of like getting more interactive with your data, being able to ask questions against a particular data set, and then whatever your interface is, then giving you back like direct answers, as opposed to like you having to look at bar charts all day, right? Now, what I'm curious about is like, you know, you've been at Capgemini. This is like at least your second, if not third time being on Living Corporate, having conversations with me or someone on our team, one of our other hosts. As you think about like the future of like the employee experience, people, DEI space, like what's keeping you in this industry? And then what's keeping you at Capgemini specifically?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay. So the industry specifically, I mean, I've seen evolution of being in corporate responsibility, DEI, this kind of holistic space for over a decade now. And there's definitely been evolutions. Some core foundational things, you know, are the same, and the ability to, you know, leverage your representation data and encourage more and more people to optionally self-ID, and making sure that you invite people to the conversation versus leaving people out of the conversation. Like that's been said in many, many different ways. And I think those are foundational things that will always come up related to this topic. I think some of the evolutions around, even the conversation of sort of like organizationally, where does a DEI office sit, is something that mm-hmm. 10 years ago we were having conversations about, and many organizations are having those same types of conversations. By the way, I think the answer is they sit wherever they'll be able to have the most influence, whatever that means for your organization. And I think that's different for different organizations, by the way. But you know, really having DEI leaders have a voice, and I know that ebbs and flows, and maybe now people might argue in some organizations they don't have as much of a voice as maybe they had in 2020 or 2021. Mm-hmm. But just seeing the evolution of the conversation and what we prioritize at different points of time, and whether it's you know, how we drive influence through this space, or how we leverage employee resource groups, or how we get the right level of executive sponsorship and engagement throughout. I like that we've sort of moved away from feeling like we needed these leadership development programs for Black and brown talent and women talent, and really—
Have we gotten away from that?
Is even if they're calling it a leadership development program, mm-hmm. I think most organizations have recognized that what they're really focusing on is how do I retain this high performing talent? How do I expose them to executives so that they can grow their network? And how do I set them up with a sponsor for future career advancement success? Because I think in many companies, probably part of the challenge is people's ability to organically grow their network. And if you aren't creating intentional ways for women, Black, Hispanic, historically marginalized and underrepresented talent to do that, then you have this same problem. And, you know, either they hit a ceiling from a development perspective, or, you know, they leave for other organizations. So to your point, maybe even if they're still calling it a leadership development program, I would hope they're focused on those three elements more than the fix the broken people element.
I love the fact that you're addressing, this is like one of my pet peeves, right? It's like when it comes to people, employee experience, and then just, and when you think about talent, a lot of times, especially with Black and brown talent, young talent, there's this like over indexing or like end or this individualizing of the situation. Oh, well, there must be something wrong with them. So we need to put them through something so they can be fixed up. Right. So they can be conditioned, rightly conditioned to then work in our environment. Our environment isn't the problem. They're the problem. So let's make sure we put them in this thing to like, whatever. Now, look, we ain't going too much behind the scenes. There's a term I want to say, but I recognize the Capgemini sponsored campaign. So I'm not going to say it, but on the Patreon, I'm going to say it. But like, there's this term to help basically people assimilate right into these, in these broader space. And it's like, yeah, that's not really what it's about. Like, think systemically and think about how your organization might need to pivot and shift and change to create the environment that's going to be conducive for overall success. Look, Janet, we've been talking, we can talk frankly quite a bit, right? I'm confident we can go on longer. Before I let you go, looking ahead, what are some of the key priorities or goals for Capgemini in advancing its corporate responsibility agenda? And how do you envision the company's role evolving in the broader sustainability ecosystem?
Yeah, just give me a second, because you said something there that triggered a thought in me before you moved on. And I'm just trying to get my thoughts together on.
No pressure.
It was the fix the broken people thing. I think because I'm always so irked by that. I'm probably just having like an emotional reaction.
As you putting your thoughts together, I'll continue to go. Like, it's a common position. It's really the default position. It's interesting, right? So Jason Tatum recently announced this whole financial literacy program thing. Now look, I got on my little online and people, sometimes, Jen, I forget I am who I am. So I'll be saying stuff. I don't be thinking people really be caring about what I got to say, like, which I know sounds ridiculous because we're sitting on a platform I own with thousands of people. So like you think at some point I would realize people actually care. I need to unpack with my therapist. The point is, he was talking about we got this financial literacy program. And I said, you know, poor people are poor because they don't have no bread. It's not because they don't understand like the interest or the benefits between like a government bond or a certificate of deposit how you transfer or convert your traditional IRA into a Roth IRA or why like an index fund might be more advantageous in a particular season than like a particular stock. Like, that's not why poor people are poor, right? Like, Poor people are poor because they don't have access to capital. They're poor because they don't have, not only do they have access to like immediate capital to help like their lives be a little bit easier, just a little bit better, but they're also poor because they're in environments that are resource deprived, from their food to their like educational resources, ironically, to even like the financial institution they have access to. It costs money to travel more than X amount of miles. Right. They're working hourly jobs, so they can't just take an extra, they can't just like book a random Saturday or Friday to go to a bank 40 minutes away. Like, they're very, so it's like, it's more systemic than that. And so sometimes though, you look at like these poor mostly black and brown communities, despite the fact, newsflash, that a lot of white folks are also poor. Right. We want to say, oh, they're illiterate, right? Even like the term financial literacy is soaked in classism and racism, right? So it's like, and so I said that, and there was this like response of financial literacy is important. If you give a poor person a bunch of money, they're going to spend all that money up immediately. And it's like, first of all, that's not what we're talking about. And no, they aren't. But then two, like, no, let's look at the system. I know we love the pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. I know we love the idea of like this hero, everybody's on this romantic hero's journey, but the reality of life, and life also includes the world of work, is that a lot of these systems need to change. A lot of these organizational structures need to change. These policies and procedures need to change. I'm not saying people are faultless and without blame. But when we over-index on individuals, Then we look up and we see planes falling out the sky and we blame in DEI for it. So that's where I'm coming from. You know what I'm saying? All right. Now, did you bake your thought? Are you ready?
That actually happened. Yeah, I'm ready. So the other thing I would add to my point around we're not trying to fix the broken people, right? It's really about giving people a platform where they're enabled to shine as leaders and making sure the right people are in the room to see them shine. So that's the way that I'm approaching it. And, you know, when we think about this, I've also thought about this around like the context of women specifically. And for example, I talked about International Women's Day. A lot of times when someone's going to host an International Women's Day panel or an event in March around gender balance and women, it feels like the themes are always soft skills or leadership development or, you know, be your authentic self or these leadership skills that are great, that are needed. You know, we want to have them. We want men and women and non-binary people to have them, by the way. But why is it always when we group, have something together with a group and it's themed around women, it seems to always be about those types of skills? Where I actually think, how about next International Men's Day? That's an actual thing.
Did not know that.
That is a real thing. Google it. I think it happens in October or November. It's toward the end of the year.
Okay.
Let's have those panel discussions about EQ and soft skills.
Because it's
the March discussions on, you know, just are we connecting on the right things related to business acumen or, you know, What are the conversations that are happening on the golf course that maybe we're not a part of?
Well, because let me say this, though.
Okay.
Because men do need the EQ classes now.
Yeah, we
all do. Yeah, but let me just say, though, that the men, the lack of self awareness and just the just cognizance of like, hey, why would you do that? Why would you say that? Why would you make that business decision? So absolutely.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Very fair point.
Let me be fair though. There are many strong women leaders who are clearly very business savvy, right?
I'm just
trying to figure out why we seem to always theme women's events around soft skills and we're not sharing all of the wonderful business knowledge and technical knowledge and process knowledge and strategy with each other. Why do we seem to always want to coach each other and have panels on confidence or executive presence or navigating your career? Right.
They're fair rhetorical questions. I think that, you know, we have to just be honest and name and clock the fact that they're not graded equitably. Right. And you're right. Like, and I think on the other side, because the things that you're saying that women are often trained for, Black and brown people often try to be trained for, hey, well, here's how you need to show up and make sure you pull your pants up just right and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Kyle or Connor, his shirt off's wrinkled and he wearing dungarees. Like, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? I'm suited and booted. I look great out here. You know what I'm saying? Don't get me started. I'm about to start. See, this is where we go. And then they're going to pull the interview. Okay. So Janet, I asked what?
Keep talking. There. We can get it edited out.
Listen, I tried to get you to land the plane. Now you got me going.
It's totally my fault. I tell you.
It is your fault. It's your fault. And now everybody's watching this because we live streaming it everywhere. And they're going to be like, dang, what's going on with Zach and Janet? And what they're talking about, interviews getting pulled. So look, looking ahead, I'm going to ask this question one more time, then we're going to get up out of here. Looking ahead, what are the key priorities or goals for Capgemini in advancing its corporate responsibility agenda? And how do you envision the company's role evolving in the broader sustainability ecosystem?
That was a lot of words. I think what you're asking me is what's the future of
what's the future? What's the future of the work in the space? What are you excited about as you think about your role in engaging that future?
Yeah, I'm excited about the ability to just continue to engage across multiple functions, right? So currently I have the opportunity to really interact with marketing more than I did previously, based on some things that I'm doing related to employer brand and talent attractiveness and talent acquisition. And so in the same way that going from being someone who was completely focused on technology transformation and information management, I had to make all sorts of shifts and learn all types of things to move into HR and corporate responsibility. Marketing, they have a jargon that I'm coming up to speed on and learning a lot about. And you know, I think I'm using a word really clearly, and it means something totally different in a marketer's context. And so I'm learning all types of things about the function of marketing now that has some interesting intersections with the work, you know, that I'm doing around the traditional corporate responsibility or corporate social responsibility or ESG. Components. And so I think it's interesting to sort of bring marketing and operations and sales. I remember being really integrated with sales at one point in my DEI journey. And that was a big learning moment in how, you know, we could really think through the context of all of this, wearing a sales hat and bringing a sales lens to it. And so just working with more people who are bringing deep functional expertise to this topic, and other practitioners can do the same, right, wherever they are. That's been really, really useful for me. And I think more functions and leaders of those functions are realizing the value of bringing leaders in the ESG space into their fold for the same reason. So these partnerships, I think, is... And that was happening before too, but it feels like the partnerships are continuing to evolve and people are seeing more and more value in those types of partnerships. And certainly, you know, I think generationally, the value of multiple perspectives and the openness of, you know, just kind of getting those different perspectives, regardless of your function, that gets more and more important generationally.
Janet, look, you're a friend of the show. You're a friend of mine personally. Okay. I appreciate you. Stop laughing. See, and that's why we, okay. I want to thank you for being here. I appreciate our conversation. I'm excited about the work that Capgemini is doing. And I'm going to just do a little bit of meta plug in here. I'm excited about this Capgemini campaign. Okay. We've got some really dope leaders that we're spotlighting. I'm really honored at the fact that Living Corporate is able to be in partnership with Capgemini, and I'm excited about the other conversations we have queued up as a part of this campaign. Okay. We will talk to you soon.
Much more interesting than me, by the way.
Here you go again. How are they much more interested in you? Ain't you a DJ?
That's true. I'm actually going to DJ my sister's 40th birthday party coming up.
And you have incredible, and your hair texture is incredible. You look like you could stand in for any of the DeBarges at any point in time.
Okay. We're taking it there. Okay.
You know, no, those are beautiful people. Are we, wait a minute.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
Okay. Cause I thought we were trying to, they are lovely.
Why bring this up at all? That's all I'm saying.
That's fine. Janet, you and I are friends. I thought I could give you a compliment and you'd appreciate it. You are in a special class of beautiful Black people. Like, you think about the DeBarges, Smokey Robinson.
Even listen. listening to this live at this point. Like, there's better things you can be doing with your afternoon. I'm just saying.
I'm trying to infuse more chaotic, positive energy into these shows. I'm noticing as we look at our data, like they perform better. Not really, to be honest.
Well, people like drama. So.
But we're not being dramatic, though.
No, but, you know, that's the closest that you're going to get to drama on a living corporate podcast. So.
Well, that's true, because we're not messy. But, you know, look, air horns to you. Okay. Respect to you.
Hear them, because your sound canceling is really great.
But, oh, is it really? Is it that great?
Yeah, there was nothing. But I know that you were throwing the DJ air horns, and I appreciate it. And I'll be your sound man. So there you
Thank you. Thank you, Janet. Hey, we'll talk to you soon. And we're excited about people checking this one out. Phenomenal conversation. Thank you again. All right, y'all. That does it for us today at Living Corporate. Thank you so much for checking out the pod. Make sure you click the links in the show notes to learn more about Capgemini and all the incredible work they're doing all around the world. Very excited. See y'all next time. Till then, peace.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.